Hey, good morning, everyone. If you'd like to, I would encourage you to open your Bibles to James chapter 3. We're going to take a look at what James has to say about how we use our words. But if you haven't been here the last few weeks, let me get you caught up again on who this James fellow is and why we care so much about what he had to say. So, after Jesus was born, Joseph and Mary had some more kids, and one of those kids was this James that we're talking about today. And last week, someone asked me the question. They thought that Mary didn't have any more kids, that she was a Virgin Mary who stayed a Virgin Mary forever. And if that was the case, then where did James come from? And before we jump into James 3, I thought we could answer that question because it's a good one. In the Catholic Church and in the Catholic tradition, they hold to the idea that Mary was forever a virgin, that Jesus was born of a Virgin Mary who would remain a virgin the rest of her life. And the Catholic tradition explains that verses about Jesus' brothers might refer to his cousins or other close family members that Mary and Joseph and Jesus would have been close to. The Protestant tradition, our tradition, does not believe that Mary remained a virgin her whole life. It seems like that would have been unfair to Joseph. So after Jesus was born, see, I'm glad my microphone was working for that one. So after Jesus was born, Mary and Joseph continued to live like married people and had more kids, and James was one of those kids. We don't know how many more kids they had, but we do have a verse that refers to Jesus' brothers plurally. So he probably had at least two, more likely three or more brothers, and he possibly could have had some sisters too, but that's not something the Bible was going to mention way back then. It wasn't exactly a good time for women's rights. So he probably had a few brothers, maybe a few sisters, and that's a long-winded explanation that gets us to James, the brother of Jesus. And we know that before the crucifixion, James was not a believer in the divinity of Jesus. None of Jesus' brothers believed that Jesus was the Son of God. And the other question that someone asked me last week was why? Why didn't they believe? Like, couldn't they just go talk to mom and dad and be like, mom and dad, did this thing with the shepherds happen? You know, you talked about the shepherds and the star and how you guys had never mind. Couldn't mom and dad just be like, yeah, all that happened? The answer to the question is we don't know. We don't know why they didn't believe. James doesn't go out of his way to explain why he didn't believe, and none of Jesus' other brothers ever say anything at all to us. So we don't know why they didn't believe in Jesus the first go around, but I have an idea, and this is not an idea that's explicitly written out. This is just me kind of guessing by reading the book of James. And my guess is that I wonder if James found it hard to believe in Jesus because he had a lot of experience with people who did believe in Jesus, but maybe didn't act like it. That's a big theme in this book of James. A lot of time spent talking to people who say they did believe in Jesus, but didn't act like it. I wonder if that's part of the reason that James might not have believed for a while. The whole book of James is a rebuke against people who say they do believe in Jesus, but don't act like it. Five chapters of rebukes of people who, James would say, have a worthless religion. He says that their faith is dead. Like, you read this book, and this is not sugarcoating it. This is not taking it easy on anyone. He's just, like, laying into people. He calls them senseless. He compares them to demons. He does not mince his words. He does not give his audience an easy way out. This is James, acquainted intimately with a lifetime of willing disbelief in the divinity of his Savior, but now he's a leader of his church, saying as strongly as his words will let him that Christ did not suffer and die on a cross so that we could feel good about our faith, but that Christ suffered and died on a cross so that our faith could change the world. And this is where we're going to jump into James chapter 3, and James is going to be a little less severe about what faithful people are supposed to do, and he's going to start being a lot more severe about how faithful people are supposed to speak. And you get the sense that James has had experience with this too. Like, he's clearly spent time with believers who talk the talk but don't talk the talk. Let's read. Many of you, not many of you, should become teachers, my fellow believers, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Anyone who is never at fault in what they say is perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. When we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. And likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. The tongue is also a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole body, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell. Cool. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by mankind, but no human being can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil, full of deadly poison. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who have been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. Can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? My brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. So James is still dropping bombs here. Here's what he has to say about people who use words recklessly and dangerously. In case you missed a couple, we'll run it down. He says their tongues are set on fire by hell. He says their tongues are a restless evil. He says their tongues are full of deadly poison. James is still not mincing his words because his aim is to convict, because evidently he knows some Christians who aren't being careful with their words. And when you're not careful with your words, you can leave behind a trail of hurt and devastation. And James knows this. He's probably dealt with and counseled people who have been damaged by the words of someone else. I did youth ministry for 14 years, and in those 14 years, I counseled hundreds of students. And 90% of the counseling that I did was students who were hurt not by anything that anyone did, but by what people said. Did you hear that? 90% of the time, my students were hurt by what people said, not by what people did. That is not a statistic that is unique to my ministry setting. It is not a statistic that's unique to teenagers. We are far, far more likely to be hurt by the things that people say to us or about us than anything else. Did you know that the average person talks for 3 to 4 hours a day. 3 to 4 hours a day that our gums are flapping, our vocal cords are engaged, and words are coming out of our mouths. 3 to 4 hours a day that our words can bless someone or curse someone. 3 to 4 hours a day that we can build someone up or tear someone down. And if the words that we speak are nothing more than the outpouring of our hearts, as James would say, then that's 3 to 4 hours a day to reveal whether or not the faith we sing about on Sunday mornings is really the faith that lives in our hearts. You know what happens when you spend 3 to 4 hours a day talking? You end up saying the craziest things. After 3 to 4 hours of talking every single day, you're going to find yourself saying maybe the craziest thing of all. Eventually, you're going to tell the truth. You get that? You might think you can conceal the real you, hide your thoughts, disguise your mind. You might think that the heart that lives inside of you will stay inside of you, but after 3 to 4 hours of talking and talking every single day, I promise you it's going to come out. James tells us that whatever comes out of our mouths will be whatever is in our hearts, blessings or cursings. And real quick, let me clarify what I mean by cursing. Every single time I have ever had this conversation with teenagers, it has turned into a legalistic conversation about which words are bad words. In fact, every time I've had this conversation with adults, it's turned into a legalistic conversation about which words are bad words. We're real tempted to be legalistic about our language because language is difficult and controlling our tongues is hard. And it would just be really easy if I could give you today like some hard and fast rules that governed us. Like if I could just give you a list of good words to say and a list of bad words to never say, maybe we would be able to control our tongues a little better. Every time I have this conversation with teenagers, I get lots of questions about the borderline curse words. You know, like we know like the five we should never say, but then there's like the ones that like some people's moms say you shouldn't say. My friend's mom says I should never say this, but my mom lets me say this. Is this word okay? And I can't ever answer those questions for anyone because those aren't the questions that James set out to answer when he said we needed to tame our tongues. Several years ago, a student showed me a text message that she received from one of the bullies at school. And this is what the text message said. It said, "I think everyone would be a lot happier if you just killed yourself." Yeah, it hurts to hear that. I don't bring that up because I want to ruin your day or make you terrified of public school. And I should mention that that was a student that went to a private school. I bring that up because this is a text message here that uses none of the bad words. None of the forbidden words. Every word in that sentence is a word that is okay to use in the right setting. James isn't trying to police the words we use. He's trying to make us conscious about how we use them. I think everyone would be a lot happier if you just killed yourself. I don't know about you, but I would rather take on the full brunt of a profane, road-raging New Yorker before I read a text message like that. I don't know about you, but I would rather hear my own children drop 1,000 of the filthiest curse words that you can imagine before I ever heard them say something like that. And I want you to hear my heart on this. I'm not saying that it's all right to go out and cuss a storm up there. What I am saying is that you can curse someone without ever cursing. Our goal should not be to figure out ways to hurt people using only PG language. The goal should be to figure out why there's this part of us that wants to hurt people and to squash that part of us before we ever use our tongues to unleash it, and that's not easy. James tells us it's not easy. He says, anyone who speaks perfectly is perfect. Anyone who speaks perfectly is perfect. He says that if there's someone who can exercise complete discipline over their tongue, then they can exercise complete discipline over their whole body. And you already know how difficult it is to exercise discipline over your body, to stick to a training plan, to wake up on time, to stick to a diet, or to give up an addiction. James is saying right here that all of those things are still easier than taming our tongues. He points out that we can train animals far easier than we can tame our tongues. They're like, we have dolphins who can do algebra, and we are still basically powerless to stop ourselves from saying hurtful things, sometimes even to the people we love. You see what we're up against. I'm not saying that every word we say is bad, or even that most of the words that we say are bad. And I'll also tell you this, most of the bad things that we say will never stick to anyone. They'll never cause permanent damage. But sometimes they will. And in the 3 or 4 hours a day that we're going to say things that are going to hurt someone, the scariest part is that we might never know which things are going to hurt. We might never know the lasting negative impact that our words are going to have. I was a freshman in high school, so like 21 years ago, I had to take a class my freshman year of high school called, it was called gym class. And I don't know if you're familiar with gym class, if you've ever been inside a locker room of a gym class filled with 14 and 15 year old freshman boys, it wasn't exactly the kind of environment where you were likely to felt verbally encouraged by your peers, okay? At least that was my experience in freshman gym class. I remember one time we were playing floor hockey for some reason. We picked teams, and I got picked last, and I got put at goalie because I wouldn't have to move a lot. And that was not great for me because it was just 15-year-old boys with a stick and a ball whacking this thing at me as hard as they could. And I made a few nice saves when the ball was moving too fast for me to get my torso out of the way. But there was this one goal in particular that was worse than the rest. Like, this kid juked me, and I went left, and he went right. In the vernacular, you might say that he broke my ankles because he juked me so bad that I dropped my stick, and I started to fall. I started to fall down toward the right while he was going left. But I was not going to give up that easy, so I reached up with my arms and tried to swing my stick at the ball. But the problem was I no longer had the stick in my hand, so I was just flailing as I fell to the ground, and the ball hit the net. And I earned a nickname that day, and the nickname that someone gave me, some clever 14-year-old, was Baby Giraffe, as in, Aaron, you are as coordinated as a baby giraffe. It's kind of cute, really. Now, here's the thing you got to know. If you've never been in a freshman boys gym class, you should know this about freshman boys gym class. Baby Giraffe was far from the meanest or cruelest or most vile thing that anyone said in that room. Believe it or not, I heard words far worse than Baby Giraffe. But for some reason, Baby Giraffe is the one that stuck with me. I had no idea at the time that it stuck with me. Just the same way you have no idea which of your words are going to penetrate someone's defenses and leave a lasting wound in their life, okay? So we got to watch all of them. That's why James writes that the tongue is so unwieldy, so impossible to control. When I was a freshman later in college, some of the guys on my dorm room floor asked me to join their intramural flag football team. Actually, asked isn't the right word. They begged me to join their intramural flag football team, and I declined hard. They kept asking me, and I kept telling them, no, like, football's not my thing. I'm not good at it. And they're like, Aaron, you'd be fine. And then I said something that I had forgotten I'd ever been told. I said, you guys, I'd be like a baby giraffe out there. Like, where did that come from? Like, this kid, this funny, mean kid when I was 14 years old, like, said something mean to me and, like, stuck this barb inside of me that I forgot was there until this moment. And I was like, I'd be like a baby giraffe out there. How long had that been in there? And this kid, Jake was a kid that lived on my floor in college. He was incredulous. He was in disbelief. He's like, Aaron, we played basketball with you the other day. You're faster than all of us. Like, you can dunk. What are you talking about? It's flag football. You're going to be fine. Here I was, a 6 foot tall 19-year-old, stuck with a set of words, two stupid little words that made me think I was still a 5 foot four 15-year-old. With our words, we can curse. And we can bless. And here's the thing about that kid in high school freshman gym class. I don't even think he was trying to be mean. He was just trying to be funny. I mean, it was funny. I laughed when it happened, but man, somehow that burrowed deep. My very favorite Bible verse, I don't know if it's the most meaningful to me, but it's my favorite one because it's fun, and it's in the Proverbs, and it says this, that the man who hurls insults at his neighbor and then says, I was only joking, is like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death. That's not like a Message translation, by the way. That's like the NIV, a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death. And I love that verse because we all joke that way, don't we? We all have times when that meanness, that twinge of sarcasm, a little bit of cruelty creeps into our jokes, and we want to say that we're only joking. Like, the man who hurls insults at his neighbor and says, I was only joking, is like a maniac shooting flaming arrows of death, just a raging psychopath with a bow and arrow and flames. I don't know who gave this guy these things, and he's just shooting them all over the place. He has no idea when or where they're going to land, but if he keeps shooting them, one of them's going to stick. And when it sticks, it's going to hurt. And it's going to burrow deep. And he's not even going to know which arrow it was, which insult took hold. And what did it take for me to get that thorn pulled out? It took words of blessing. For me to get that thorn pulled out, it took words of blessing from someone who said, hey, Aaron, let me tell you what we see in you, all the things that we think you're good at. Our words can be used to bless. Our words can be used to curse. And it's not just James that climbs up on this horse. In Ephesians 5, Paul writes that There should not be obscenity. But he also places a prohibition against foolish talk and coarse joking, and instead says we should use our words for thanksgiving. Proverbs 4:24 says we should keep corrupt talk from our lips. Ephesians 4:29 is probably my favorite verse on this. It says, do not let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths, but only what is helpful for building others up according to their needs, that it may benefit those who listen. Don't let any unwholesome talk come out of your mouths. And yeah, we get that. Don't say bad stuff. We've covered that a lot today, okay? But it's the next part says we should only say what is helpful for building others up. And that word only is a tough one. You mean I should speak only to build others up? What about my stupid jokes, my gift of sarcasm, the way that we rip on politicians or the idiot coach of our favorite football team? It's right here, church. It says, but only what is helpful for building others up. Can we be honest for a minute? Can we admit that all of us have said hurtful things? Sometimes on accident. Sometimes as jokes. Sometimes in passive-aggressive barbs disguised as compliments. Can we admit that we have all of us, said hurtful things on purpose because we were mad, because we wanted to, because we weren't in control of our tongues? See, this is tough because most of us in this room, I'm guessing for most of us in this room, you could never, ever imagine hurting another person with your fists or with a weapon. You could never imagine yourself violence. We confess to God and to one another that we have wrought those kinds of hurts, hurt beyond hurt, with the things that we've said and the way that we've said them. We confess we have hurt people we don't like. We've hurt people we don't even know. Can we confess that we've hurt people that we love? And if you're tracking with me, if you're feeling that weight on your shoulders, your heart, I have to confess to you that I'm right there with you. And I want to pray for you and for me and for all of us. But before I do that, I want to challenge you with something else. Because if James were here, he would point out that eliminating our hurtful speech is only half the equation. The other half is working more intentionally to bless others with our words, to be to other people the way Jake was to me my freshman year of college. Tell your friends and your families what you see in them. Tell your coworkers what they're good at. Put aside the insecurity that you feel if you ever have to admit that anyone might be better at anything than you are, and offer those compliments, prayers, blessings, and truths. And on all of this, we got to dig deep past our tongues, past our throats, and into our hearts. If you're lashing out, impatient, crude, if you're throwing around sarcasm and biting words that'll leave a mark, then that should point to you an issue that's not in your tongue, but an issue in your heart that's only going to be solved when you surrender and give up to God. And if that's you today, if you've got something in your heart that's hurting you and that's manifested itself in you hurting other people, then let's pray together for ourselves and for all of us. God, we confess that we are a sinful people. We have sinned against you and against our neighbors. We have cursed your creation, oftentimes without meaning to, oftentimes with hard, weary, angry, impatient hearts. Soften us. Fill us with your Spirit. Help us to finally let go of the anger and injustice that fuels the way we treat other people. Instead, fill us with hope, with grace, with love, with peace, with forgiveness, with patience, with kindness, and with truth. Like that spring with the fresh water, we want your Spirit to flow in and through us, to fill our words and conversations, to spill out to a world that needs to be lifted up. We belong to you. We belong to one another. It's your love that heals us. It's your love that will bring us back together again, and it's your love that we need to share today and always.